Mahārāja, Supreme Bhakti Bhaktivedanta Goswami Mahārāja, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Jai Om Vishnu Prabhupāda Paramahansa, Prabhupāda Gacharya, Sodara Vrishi, Śrī Mahārāja, Supreme Bhakti Śrīla Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura Mahārāja, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. ISKCON founder Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivarika Charja Stotra Sarashi Shri Mahārāja Vaigra Shula Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura Mahārāja Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Shila Haridas Thakura Ki Jai Prema Se Gautri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyam Kundarara Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Srinavarup Dham Ki Jai Sri Sri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Sri Sri Madhavara Dham Ki Jai Sri Sri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Gaur Prema Nandi Harinama Sankirtan Ki Jai Sri Sri Brihat Madanga Ki Jai Jantana Prasadam Distribution Ki Jai Sri Sri Gorni Thai Ki Jai Sri Sri Jagannatha Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Giri Thai Ki Jai Sri Sri Nudarshan Dham Ki Jai Samveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Reading from Prabhupada Nectar by His Holiness Satsarupa Das Goswami. Volume 3, Chapter 18, Realizations. There are so many ways you can glorify Srila Prabhupada. There are so many ways you can speak about Srila Prabhupada. There are so many things you can say because Prabhupada was unlimited. Prabhupada is unlimited. Everything he ever did was unlimited. No one could understand the depths of Prabhupada's actions or his words. They're inconceivable. Sometimes I hear devotees tell me, oh, you are so lucky. You associated personally with Srila Prabhupada so much. And sometimes I might say, oh, yes, because I don't want to make an argument. It's not that I'm trying to say I wasn't lucky. I felt very fortunate, but I don't feel like I ever associated with Srila Prabhupada personally. It may be hard to understand how you can be with somebody so much yet not associate with them personally. Because I could never understand Srila Prabhupada, therefore I could not even begin to conceive of how to associate with him personally. I often became very jealous. I became very much jealous often of Hari Saridas because I could sit in front of Srila Prabhupada and him, and Srila Prabhupada would talk with him like an old friend. I used to be envious like anything because Srila Prabhupada never spoke to me like that. Tamal Krishna Maharaj would sit in front of Srila Prabhupada and they would discuss all kinds of things, and I would be envious because Srila Prabhupada never spoke to me like that. And Bhavananda Maharaj would come to Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada would be so nice with him all the time, and all he did ever was hit me on the head. I'm envious because they all have such a deep relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Yet in my case, I don't even understand the relationship that well. All I know is that every time I wanted to be close to Srila Prabhupada, he would end up taking out his club and just cracking my head. This went on consistently. It's very difficult to understand because when I was secretary, I tried to imitate former secretaries and all I did was get smashed to pieces. When I was servant, I tried to imitate former servants, and it never worked. When I was GVC and I came to visit, I tried to imitate other GVCs who came to visit, and it didn't work. When Prabhupada was going to leave the planet, I couldn't even be part of that. I was not part of that. I was not part of Prabhupada's appearance pastime in the Western world. I was not part of Prabhupada's disappearance pastime in the manifested universe. I always lamented why I was so stupid, wasting my time in university in 1969 doing nothing, when Srila Prabhupada was downstairs in my dormitory, sitting there. I walked right through the room, didn't even know it, didn't see him, didn't see the devotees, didn't see anything, just walked right through, didn't see him, didn't see anybody. Never heard of it. Until 4 years later, the person I was living with said, "Do you remember the Swami who was in our dormitory that day?" I said, "What Swami?" Later on, I told this to Srila Prabhupada. He just laughed. I then asked, "Why didn't I see you then? I always wanted to be part of this first days." He shook his head. "You were not ready." I hung my head on the floor. Then I remember when Srila Prabhupada was departing. I wanted to be there. There were so many things, huge court cases. Prabhupada was happy if I gave him some books. So I wanted to make so many books. I was running around going to printers. I had just gotten another batch of books ready to bring to Srila Prabhupada, and then he disappeared. I wasn't even part of Prabhupada's pastimes, and I don't feel that I ever really personally associated with him. And on his disappearance days, I don't feel apart. Yet I was trying to understand why. Then I understood, just listening to everybody today for the first time. This has been very instructive. In 1976, in January, Prabhupada sent me away. He sent me away and gave me the instruction that was to be the instruction which I always was to remember him by. He always used to chastise me on this one point, why I always insist on being with him personally, and why I don't understand his instructions. Why are you always so attached to this so-called personal association? Don't you understand that the Vani is more important than the Bapu? Don't you understand that I want you to do something? Then I was always trying to again come back to Srila Prabhupada, even after he had sent me away to perform his services. I understand now. That was the final sending away at that time. I was not going to have that personal relationship that I always had. I was just sent away, menial servant. One time, I tried to forcibly put myself back into Prabhupada's association. After about 3 days of being Prabhupada's secretary in 1976 in August, when he was in New Mayapur, France, Prabhupada asked me to write a letter, and I spelled every other word wrong. I'm a horrible speller. He wanted to get rid of me then and there, after 3 days, because I was such a terrible speller. And why didn't I use a dictionary? Actually, I had to take a devotee as my editor. He had to edit the whole letter because I was so hopeless. I said to Srila Prabhupada, "But your other secretaries can't spell either. I've seen. Why are you chastising me for not being able to spell and now kicking me away?" And then he was very insistent. He was chastising me for everything I did. I was getting more and more upset. And I was holding on more and more. "No, I won't go. I refuse." It became a huge battle. "Go away." "No, I won't." And then more and more beating and beating and beating and beating. This is all Hare Krishna. At the end of all this beating here in Vrindavan, I came and I said, "I quit. I can't take it anymore." He said, "You can't quit. I fire you. Even to the last, get out, go, serve." I said, "I don't want to go back. There's so many troubles in that place I come from." He said, "I don't care what you do when you go back. You just sit in your room and chant Hare Krishna, but stay there." I said, "How can I go traveling alone in the mountains? No strong association. Nobody will go with me. Too dangerous." He said, "Then you go alone. You should be very careful of this so-called strong association." Contradicting again and again everything I said. One time, "There's nothing to eat, Srila Prabhupada." He said, "Then eat meat if you have to." I said, "But what about my consciousness?" He said, "Damn your consciousness. You have to preach." He just bewildered me, unbending. He wanted it done, that's all. "Make my books, distribute my books, preach, that's all. Don't come back here crawling on the floor, wanting to sit in front of me and wave your fingers." I was typing his books, listening to his latest words in my ears, completely happy. He wants these things. He's very insistent. And because I would probably get all lost in sentimentality, I don't think I would have been able to tolerate Prabhupada's disappearance. Even to this day, I cannot stand to see a picture of Prabhupada's disappearance. I cannot stand to hear descriptions of Prabhupada disappearing. I don't watch Yadavara's movie because of this, and he doesn't like that, but I just can't stand it. I don't know. I'm too sentimental. I can't stand it. Prabhupada knew me perfectly. He dealt with me in a completely unique way just to circumvent that mentality and make me attached to his instructions. Prabhupada dealt with each and every one of us so perfectly, every single devotee so uniquely. No one can say that they have a complete picture of Srila Prabhupada. You can't even know one small feature, because in each and every circumstance, how Prabhupada dealt with everybody was so unique and marvelous, just like Krishna. You cannot know Krishna fully. His glories are unlimited. You can see in Prabhupada's dealings how he's manifesting more and more energies, his shaktis, making devotees do things that are inconceivable all over the world, inconceivable things. I'll never forget what Satsvarup Maharaj once wrote in his Back to God editorial on charisma. A police captain in New York said, "You know why this New York Rath Yatra is a success? Because the Swamiji wanted it so, because he wanted it." Everybody can understand Prabhupada's potencies, how Prabhupada is forcing us just to push on more and more. Gradually, gradually, as the years go on, I understand the Vani is Srila Prabhupada. I'm somewhat more satisfied, although I'm sure if I had the opportunity, I would still be diving his lotus feet and saying, "Take me with you." But we have this responsibility, regardless of our feelings of separation in ISKCON. In all circumstances, just keep on printing, keep on distributing, keep on building, and keep on working together, just so we can massage the transcendental body of Srila Prabhupada all together. Each one of us is taking a portion of his body and massaging it so that he'll be satisfied and comfortable. Somebody is massaging Srila Prabhupada in this way, somebody in that way, but as long as it's all pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, that should be our whole pleasure. I have a long passage there. These are realizations. Next one is by Jagadish. Different people. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tatho Jayamudirayat Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And we're reading from the second canto, 9th chapter, 33rd verse. This is one of the seed verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Did you do this verse at all? Start it? It's a long, very long purport. We probably won't read the whole thing today. Okay, I'll try to chant this in the melody that Prabhupada was teaching to the LA devotees in 1971. Aham evasam evagre aham. I need the harmonium. Let's see. They're used to doing it the wrong way. I don't know if it's wrong, but the other way. We'll do word for word first. Aham
ivasam
ivagre
nanyat
yat sarasat param kuschat aham yat etach cha yo ashishita sasmyaham aham evasam evagre
aham
evasam evagre nanyat yanyatat sarasat param. I'm useless at this melody. Nanyad yad sarasat param
nanyad
pasyaham tare tachcha yovasheta sam samyaham
yovasheta samyaham.
Aham evasam evagre
aham evasam evagre
nanyadyat sarasat param
nanyadyat sarasat param
asyaraham taretachcha यो वशिष्येतस्स्म्यहम् I, the personality of Godhead. Eva. Certainly. Asam. Existed. Eva. Only. Agre. Before the creation. Na. Never. Anyat. Anything else. Yet. All those. Sat. The effect. Asat. The cause. Param, the supreme. Parasyat, at the end. Aham, I, the personality of Godhead. Yat, all these. Etat, creation. Cha, also. Yaha, everything. Avashishyate, remains. Sorry, it's avashishyeta. Avashishyeta remains. Saha, that. Asmi, I am. Aham, I, the personality of Godhead. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation when there was nothing but myself, nor was the material nature the cause of this creation, nor was there the material nature the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead, and after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Responsibly, Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who is existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Report by Srila Prabhupada. We should note very carefully that the personality of Godhead is addressing Lord Brahma and specifying with great emphasis himself, pointing out that it is he, the personality of Godhead, who existed before the creation. It is he only who maintains the creation, and is he only who remains after the annihilation of the creation. Brahma is also a creation of the Supreme Lord. One thing we can learn from some of these comments is what we understand by the meaning of eternity. Generally, we think of eternity as something that's a very long time, and sometimes we're called Nityabhata, living entities, and there's Nityasiddha, living entities, eternally liberated, Nitya, eternal. But those eternals also have a beginning. It's like Jai Srila Prabhupada was saying in his class a few weeks ago, that there's good, better, and best in the spiritual world. And one can be perfect in the material world and also be in the spiritual world. One can be perfect. And one can be more perfect. And one can even go beyond being more perfect. So in the sense of there an ever-existing time which has no past, present, and future in the spiritual world, we regard eternity as limited, and we can regard it as limited because we, at some point, we lost our Krishna consciousness, but it happened so long ago that for us it's eternal. So there's the Nityabhata aspect, there's the Nityasiddha aspect. And of course, Nityasiddha is somewhat deceptive in that it indicates that a person is eternally liberated. There's a certain type of living entity that is Nityasiddha. But sometimes Nityasiddha describes all living entities because that are free from, that are liberated, because they're liberated also from, because everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. That's the reason. From eternity, mama evam so jiva loke, everyone is eternally related to Krishna as part and parcel. So in that sense, everyone can be considered Nityasiddha, even though we're not all Nityasiddha. consider. Though it's just a way of understanding that there's a relativity between what we consider eternal and what is eternal, and what the meaning of eternal is and what the meaning of siddha or nitya is. So here Krishna is saying that there's, like, Brahma's duration is very, very long. It's thousands and thousands of times longer than our lifetime, and yet Krishna is even more, lives longer than Brahma, and he has really, he is the ultimate of nitya. He has no beginning and no end. So before everything was set into motion, he was there, and after everything that we see is annihilated, he will remain. So these are some of the ways that he's showing that he's eternal. And of course, these are very deep things, very deep concepts, and Brahma himself meditated on these verses. This is one of the four seed verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're very deep. And Lord Brahma actually had to meditate on what these things meant for a long, long time, for millions of our years, to understand how to compose the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are very deep things, deep concepts, and Prabhupada spends many, many pages elaborating on what these verses actually mean. And even then, they're not necessarily complete. He spoke about how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati lectured sometimes for months on one verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not that the Bhagavatam verses are to be just read and glossed over, or sometimes we read them and people read them and don't read the purports, but they're very deep and they can be read and reread, and there's always new meaning in them. Therefore, these books are eternal in nature and they have very deep meaning, and they shouldn't be read mechanically, but one should try to get the very deepest possible meaning out of them and to dive deep into the inner meaning of these words, because they mean a lot, and as you read them, they take on newer and newer meaning. The impersonalist puts forth the theory of oneness in the sense that Brahma, also being the same principle of I, because he is an emanation from the I, the absolute truth, is identical with the Lord. The principle of I, and that there is nothing more than the principle of I, as explained in this verse. So sometimes there's a notion to take the Vedas as being the all-in-all. And of course, Krishna says that it's very important to read the Vedas, and he says that it's important to read the Brahma Sutra, or the Vedanta Sutra. But he also says that I am, aham eva vedyo, aham eva vedyo, that I am the Vedas. So to read the Vedas, because they deal mostly, as it says, with the three modes of material nature in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, without making Krishna the center of things, it can be very demonic. For example, Ravana was a great scholar. He had mastered many of the different Vedas and was very learned. And because he didn't understand the essence, Krishna says, I am the Veda, he was inimical, and he was in the category of demonic, actually. So when it is said that Krishna is everything, it's very important, because we can understand the external features of Krishna, manodate nasati dabato vihi, and hover on that platform and be very learned, but still be inimical to Krishna. So that's the difference between theism and atheism. We can learn from the Vedas so much about karmakandi, about how to deal with life, because they're very thorough and they're very complete, and they tell us how to worship various demigods and how to do various rituals and perform things to get certain material benefits. But to actually know that Krishna is the not only the source, but he is the Vedas, and he says, of all the Vedas I am to be known, that's the essence of learning, and that's what Brahma was given to understand, that I exist and I am the Veda, and that's the most important thing to learn. Sometimes, we were discussing this actually not long ago about the term demon and how we use it. And one of the meanings of it is that it's someone who's against the Supreme Personality of God, even though one may be very learned externally. So we have the word asura, which means one who is religious or pious or a devata or a demigod. And then we have the word asura. And in Sanskrit, this affix that goes before sometimes it's v, it means not or not godly. So we have the words theism and atheism in English. We have one who's a theist, who's basically a believer in God, and then we have atheist, person who doesn't believe in God. So as we were talking, of course you could give a whole course on the meaning of the word demon. We sometimes avoid using this word. And Prabhupada, I was doing a search, and the word demon appears something like 2,400 times. The word demons appears about 2,400 times. And as opposed to other words like theist and atheist, which appear maybe 500 and 600 times respectively, something like that. And then words like karmi and devotee and non-devotee, they appear even less. Now it's clear that Prabhupada wanted his devotees to make a clear distinction between those who were demonically inclined and those who were not, so that they wouldn't be taken in, because it is very deceitfully alluring to be in the material nature. There are so many things that allure us, and we all know what our attachments are. So Prabhupada wanted to make it very clear that there is a demonic nature. And in one of his purports, actually it's one of his lectures, he talks about Maya, that Maya being a kind of demonizing force, and that it's not like the devil, because generally when we talk about demon, we think of a fiend, or a devil, or some entity who's you know out to get us, or is evil, or wicked, or intrinsically vile, somehow like that. And there's a concept in some faith confessions that there is this individual, you know, it may be Maya personified, it might be the devil or whatever, who's tempting us, and who's just an evil, wicked person. In one of Prabhupada's lectures, he talks about Maya being a condition of consciousness, and not necessarily being an individual, but a force, kind of within our own selves, that's there, that's alluring us. So sometimes Prabhupada talks about the lower mind and the higher mind and the lower mind, the higher self and the lower self. And the indication is that this tendency to be allured by Maya, to be demonic, it's there in everybody. And one example, it's not exactly an example of this, but like Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of demons. And when he talked to his father, he addressed him as the king of the Asuras, Asura Raj, or the head of the Daityas and so on, even though he was his own father, but he made that distinction. So Prabhupada often made that distinction. There are the devatas, there are devotees, and there's the demons. And it's kind of like convenient. And it's helpful for us because we have a kind of healthy pessimism about the material world and everything that's alluring and attractive about it. But at the same time, because it's very much Lord Chaitanya's movement, and he was very merciful to people like Jagai and Madai, because it is an imperative, and we might say it's kind of our mission to convert those who are demonic, or the demons, to devotees. It's a very interesting and very exciting process. We've got a whole world full of demons, full of people who are very allured by Maya. They're trapped in some form of, whether it's corporate greed or individual greed or just love of entertainment or nature, so many things, because Maya has many facets, many ways of attracting the conditioned souls. And it's kind of a sport of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's kind of a mission that he's established, that all those millions and billions of people out there who don't have a clue about Krishna consciousness, who are engaged in eating meat and doing all kinds of illicit activities, like so many of us did, are to be converted. That's the game that Prabhupada told us to play, and that he was so very happy when he saw us very actively, enthusiastically playing that game. And that's what kind of our mission is, or what Lord Chaitanya established, that people need to change. And very often we run into people who don't understand that Krishna himself is actually not just an incarnation. As soon as you say incarnation, you ask, well, who's incarnation? And that thought that Krishna is merely incarnation exists in the minds of many people. And because he appears on this earth, he appears out of the body of Vishnu, people think that that's it. But here Krishna is establishing that he is the origin of everything. He's the origin of all the Vishnus. He's the origin of all the incarnations. And he exists all the time, everywhere, as he's beginning, the very beginning, and he will exist after the annihilation. So he establishes himself. And of course, to establish him in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is to establish that it's necessary not to see the world in terms of us and them, but to see everyone in terms of mama evam so jiva loke, that everyone in a sense is a nitya siddha, even though they might be demons, they might be demonic. As we said before in a class, or I did, that many of us were, by the way we measure demons, we were demons because we did everything that demons do. And we never know that that demon might be a guru someday. And of course there's so many things to back that up in Vedic literature, that the demonic, they not only become devotees, but they can become very elevated, they can become very saintly, very pious. And one example was that Jagai and Madai, when they were converted, not forcibly of course, but they had a kind of a natural brahminical upbringing, as did Ajamil, who also became very demonic. They took their vows and they never did anything wrong again. They never sinned. They changed from, first they were suras, then they were asuras, and they were suras again. Of course, the Bhagavatam is very harsh in its treatment sometimes of the division between the two. And it's said there that yes, yes, the bhakti bhagavati kinshanada, if one becomes a devotee, then all the good qualities of the suras are there automatically in the body of such a devotee. Kind, religious, good, all the good things are there. Behavior is impeccable. Prabhupada talked about how his disciples were faultless and how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you could examine him top to bottom, front to back, and you could never find any fault in him. But that verse continues and it says, Hara Abhaktasya Kuto Mahaduna Manoratina Satidabhatovahi, that if one is not a devotee or abhakta, Hara Abhaktasya Kuto Mahaduna, then there's nothing. There are no good qualities. So that also is a very kind of harsh treatment. Once we were in a meeting with Srila Prabhupada and the Deacon Carpenter, he was the kind of main priest of the Westminster Abbey. I think he was the priest of the royal family. I don't know if he still lives or not. And he had this Lord with him. I can't remember his name right now. Maybe Lord Sober. Anyway, he'd been to India. And Prabhupada was talking about real Christians and atheists and theists. And English Lord, I think he's one of the people that didn't come into the House of Lords very often. You know, they don't have to come. They have the backbenchers that don't come in maybe once a week. And then they have the backwoodsmen, and they come in maybe once a year or something. So he was kind of like the backwoodsman type. So anyway, Prabhupada was talking, and he was saying that atheists they don't have the good qualities, because they might, in a sense, superficially be very obedient and loyal and moral and religious, going to church and so on, but their quality of life isn't really good. So this gentleman kind of took a cue from the Archdeacon Carpenter, and he said, oh, well, I have a lot of friends who are atheists. They're atheists, and I think they're very nice people, very good people. They are. I don't see anything wrong with them. And Prabhupada just shook his head and looked at him and said, if he's an atheist, he has no good qualities. And this man kind of smirked and shook his head and said, oh, I couldn't subscribe to that. No, that's not true. No way. Anyway, the conversation kind of came to a halt and there was a kind of awkward silence there. And then the Deacon Carpenter said, well, he was trying to kind of pacify the situation. He said, we're Christians and you're Hindus, and it's no good that we're talking like this. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, yes, it's good. He said, but it's very hard to find a real Christian. And we thought, well, you know, he's going to think that's true, because after all, you know, most people are kind of hypocritical about their religion. And again, he was just silent. It was another moment of very awkward silence. And then Prabhupada could see that he was somehow not going to respond, although we thought he would, that he would agree with him. And then the conversation kind of went on. The purpose was that we wanted to asked the archdeacon to help us get a redundant church. There were numerous redundant churches that had been converted into banks and insurance companies in London. And every time we applied, it would say, well, we'll let you know as soon as something comes on the market. We were in London. This is around 1969, 1970. And they never really told us about it. And all the ones that we saw that were redundant became insurance companies and banks and offices. And they just didn't want to let the Hare Krishnas have a church. They weren't about to let some Eastern faith take on one of the Church of England churches, no matter how redundant they were. Anyway, that didn't really get anywhere. But the point I was making was that if one isn't theistic, or if one is demonic in quality, then one may try to be very moral and upstanding citizen and all that sort of thing. But unless God is in the picture, then it won't happen. Prabhupada was in the post office once, sending his Bhakti Godhead magazines out, and one of the postmen, who was a member of some group, I don't know who it was exactly, said, well, you know, the main thing is just to be upright and moral and honest and loyal and faithful and obedient and be a good person. And why do you have to call your magazine back to Godhead? You know, why do you have to have God? Because we can be all those things without God, I think. I mean, I'm that way, and I don't think you need to have God. So I'm just asking you philosophically. And Prabhupada's answer was that if you don't have God, you can't be moral, you can't be honest, you can't be obedient. It's not possible. And then he went on to say in one of his lectures that because of the modes are mixed, just like the colors, that we have the primary colors, red, yellow, and blue, and they mix and they become infinite millions of different colors,